I was preparing to preach on Acts 17:30 this past week. I was into it well, and then I was having my devotions Thursday morning, and the passage I'm going to preach on this morning is what I read because I believe the Lord would have me to do so. I've often remarked how many people at Westside deal with issues that you have no idea about. I know a lot of them, but I know I don't know all of them. Every one of us is dealing with something that others don't know anything about. It could be physical pain. It could be financial issues. It could be things that have happened in the past with loss of family, spouse, parents, health issues, financial security, disabilities, pain, affliction, suffering. David in Psalm 142, and this isn't the text, but I just want to read this to you. In verse 4, he says, I looked on my right hand and beheld, but there was no man that would know me. Refuge failed me. No man cared for my soul. No man cared. We usually focus on the last part, no man cared for my soul, but that follows this statement. There was no man that would know me. There was no man even willing to take notice of what was happening in my life. If someone would just notice, I would know that they care. And sometimes we're hesitant to share with somebody else because we don't want to broadcast it. We don't want to burden other people with it, and that's understandable. So sometimes we don't know. Sometimes I, as the pastor, I don't know. I think sometimes people think that I'm omniscient, and I'm not. You didn't know that, Pastor? No, I didn't. No one told me. How am I supposed to know? And so we'll often share something with somebody else and leave it there. But I want you to see this morning how you should respond to God's care for you. In fact, I want you to be able to leave after this sermon this morning and say this: it is enough for me to know that God knows. Amen. That's it. That's enough. It's enough for me to know that God knows. It's not enough that the pain's taken away, that the affliction's taken away, that the financial problems are taken away. You know what? It's just enough if I just knew God knew. Now, really down in our hearts, does he know? We say that. We acknowledge that. We assent to that. But really, when it comes down to it, it's hard for us to really leave it there. And so I was having my devotions in Exodus. And I preached through Exodus. I went in detail. You remember, it took us... How long, Megan? She's always so nice. I took quite a few breaks and did other things. That's like taking breaks from Acts 17 today. I just felt led to preach this sermon. But we, in detail in Exodus, and I saw something that just, I didn't preach, so I'm going to preach it this morning. Would you go with me to Exodus chapter 3? While you're turning, Did Israel ever have a hard time? Did Israel ever have affliction and suffering? Did Israel ever have pain? Did Israel have tremendous affliction? Well, that's what the whole book starts with. I mean, the Pharaoh who is in charge, Joseph is dead. He doesn't know Joseph. Doesn't he even seem to know what happened with Joseph? And so the children of Israel are multiplying, and he says, we got to do something about this. And he begin to enslave these people and make it hard on them. They become their taskmasters. He kills their boys as they're born, and just tremendous suffering and affliction. Oh, if God would just know about this. Look at Exodus chapter 3 and verse 7. The Lord is talking to Moses, and he says to Moses, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. You know, there's a Bible verse that explicitly states that God cares for you. In fact, I almost said it just in what I said right there. It's stated this way, he careth for you. He careth for you. God cares. That's found in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 7. Let me ask you something. Does God care for things that are not human? Paul is writing to the church at Corinth in 1 Corinthians 9:9, and he says, now, do not muzzle, he's quoting the Old Testament, thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. And then he ends it this way. Doth God take care for oxen? Does God care about oxen? As Jesus said of the fowls of the air that God provides for, are ye not much better than they? Are you not better than oxen? And yet God cares for them. And he cares for you so much more. Jesus, a couple of times, was pointedly asked if he cared. In fact, this person said, dost thou not care? That was Martha in Luke 10:40. Martha was cumbered about much serving and came to him and said, Lord, dost thou not care that my sister hath left me to serve alone? Bid her therefore that she help me. Same word, care, that we see in 1 Peter 5:7. And we, like Martha, are tempted to wonder if God cares when I'm the only one doing all the work. And Jesus is sitting right there. The disciples got into a boat with the Lord once. It was on the Sea of Galilee. And a storm came up. And the Bible says that he was in the hinder part of the ship asleep on a pillow. And they awake him and say unto him, Master, carest thou not that we perish? So there's another instance where people went to Jesus specifically and said, don't you care? He's asleep. It's easy to think in the midst of life's storms and the storm that you are experiencing in your life right now, and if not right now, you will. It's easy to think in the midst of life's storms that God does not care. And it's easy to do exactly what the disciples did and say, Lord, don't you care? Don't you care we're about to perish? Don't you understand what I'm going through right now? You see, it's not always evident that God does care. So the assurance that is given in 1 Peter 5:7, he careth for you, must be taken by faith, because it's not always evident that he does care. There's myriad examples in the Bible. Did Job wonder if God cared? He absolutely did. Read the book of Job. Where is he when I'm in trouble? Did God know what was happening with Job? The book starts with the sons of God appearing before God, Satan included, And hast thou considered my servant Job, God says to him. God knew what was going to happen to Job before it even happened. And even gave his permission. Joseph suffered tremendously. He tried to do what was right. He gets thrown into a pit. Sold into slavery. Tries to do what's right as a slave of Potiphar. Gets thrown into prison. Tries to do what's right in prison. Interprets the dream of both men, the baker and the butler. And the one, the butler who was restored, he says, now remember me. And 2 years later, he still hadn't remembered until something came up. And finally, he's remembered. Man, doesn't God care? It's not always evident. Edmund Hebert, in his commentaries, quoting Howard Masterman, who said, it is the belief that God cares that marks off Christianity from all other religions. Here's the nation of Israel in bondage, suffering, affliction, and there in chapter 3 and verse 7, we have the words, from God's mouth to Moses, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt. Now, you can place your name in there, and you can say, by faith, God has seen my affliction. He's heard my cry by reason of my taskmaster, for God knows my sorrows. God knows the afflictions and the sorrows of his own. He knows your pain. He knows your suffering. He knows your loss. And he cares. Look at that phrase there in 3:7a. I have surely seen. He sees what his people are enduring, the affliction and where they are in Egypt. Does God care? A sparrow, Jesus said, shall not fall on the ground without your father. That's the way the King James puts it, without your father. A sparrow can't even fall to the ground. I used to shoot them on the farm just to have fun. And then I read this verse. God knows I just shot that sparrow. With everything else he has in this entire world, yea, in this entire universe, he's watching that little sparrow fall to the ground. And he's watched every hair in my head fall out. That's what he says. There's nothing that does not take place without God knowing. Especially for you. Especially for you. Somebody wrote the song, His Eye is on the Sparrow. And I know he cares for you, or that he cares for me. I have seen, he says in verse 7. He also says in verse 7, I have heard. I have, what has he heard? I have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters. Now, I took some time thinking about this. Nowhere does it say that their cry is them praying to God. Praying is not mentioned here. It just mentions that he hears their cry. Like a parent would hear the cry of a child. The child is not necessarily crying out for the parent, but the child is hurt and cries, and the parent knows about it. Their cry came up to God, it says in chapter 2 and verse 23. And it means that God heard not their praying, but verse 24 of chapter 2, their groaning. You see that in verse 24 of chapter 2? God heard their groaning. Psalm 34:15, the eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous and his ears are open unto their cry. And then the last part of verse 7, I know their sorrows. God knows your sorrows. And he knows what you're going through. He knows your pain. He knows your loss. And you can rest assured that he does. So that's God's assurance. That's the last part of 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 7. For he careth for you. That's God's assurance. Careth. But here's the second point to what I want to give this morning, and it's my last point. That doesn't mean it's going to be short. Your response. God knows. How will you respond? And I want to key in on the word in 1 Peter 5:7. I don't know if you're there or not, but maybe you know the verse. In fact, I would encourage you to have your finger there in 1 Peter 5:7 and just look at it, because sometimes when you see something, it helps with not only hearing it, but seeing it one more sense that will enable you to remember what we're talking about and what the Bible says. As you look at that verse, what's the very first word of 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 7? Casting. And that's the response, casting. The last part of the verse, for he careth for you, that's the careth part that I want you to get. That's God's assurance. Verse 7, the first word, casting, but it goes on to say, all your care upon him. This response is key. God assures us that he knows our sorrows, even as he assured the children of Israel, Moses, in Exodus chapter 3 and verse 7. And I want you to note something. When God says that to the children of Israel through Moses in chapter 3 and verse 7 of Exodus, he does not assure them that he will remove their pain and sorrows. He assures them that he knows. So if you are assured that God knows your sorrows, your pain, your affliction, if you are assured of that, how do you respond? How should you respond? If you know that God knows, if it is enough that God knows, how should you respond? Well, look at the phrase again in 1 Peter 5:7. He careth for you. I have purposely left out of a word. It's the word for. For he careth for you. It's literally the word because he careth for you. That should alert you to the preceding action in the verse. Casting all your care upon him because he cares for you. So because he cares for you, what should you be doing? Casting. You should be casting. The last phrase is God's assurance. The first phrase should be your response. Because he cares for you, here's how you should respond. Casting all your care upon him. Your care. Can we look at that word care for a minute? What are you caring about? Jesus uses that word in Mark 4:19, the cares of this world choke the word and the planted seed becomes unfruitful. So one of the causes of unfruitfulness is the cares of this world. In another case, in Luke 21:34, Jesus said, take heed to yourselves. He's talking about his second coming, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with cares of this life. Same word. And so that day comes upon you unawares. So the cares that we should be casting upon him, in this instance, we hold on to. And it's these cares that distract us from his coming. Jesus puts it this way in Matthew chapter 6. He's talking about what you need to eat, to drink, and clothing. And he says it this way. Now, take no thought, what shall I eat? Take no thought, what I shall drink. Take no thought, what I shall wear. Are you concerned about what you're going to eat? That's where he says, he provides for the fowls of the air. Are you not much better? Are you concerned about what you're going to wear? He says, he clothes the lily of the field. Are you not much better? Take no thought. Three words, take no thought, that is the same as this word, care. I love the way that the King James actually puts that, because the word thought is included in care. Why is it that you worry? That's another word for the word care. Why is it that you are anxious? Another word for the word care. Why is it that you constantly think about these things? Because it is what you worry about. It is anxiety to you. You are anxious for these things. What am I going to wear? What am I going to eat? What am I going to drink? And he says, take no thought. When Martha had said to Jesus, don't you care? Remember what Jesus answers? Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled. The word careful is the word care here. Martha, you're worried about stuff. Martha, you keep your thoughts are constantly going in the wrong place. You know this verse in Philippians 4, 6. Be careful for nothing. Be careful for nothing. Quit worrying and being anxious. But in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. You say he already knows. Do you really believe that? What's going to help you is when you actually pray about it so that you know that God knows. He does know. But he does command you to pray about it. So the disciples once accused God with, don't you care? Let me read that full passage. It's in Mark chapter 4. Just listen as I read this. Verses 37 to 40. There arose a great storm of wind, and the waves beat into the ship so that it was now full. And he was in the hinder part of the ship asleep on a pillow. And they awake him and say unto him, Master, carest thou not that we perish? And he arose and rebuked the wind and said unto the sea, peace be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. And he said unto them, why are ye so fearful? How is it that ye have no faith? You know what Jesus is saying? If you truly believe that I am in the boat with you in the storm, and if you truly believed that I cared, you would have no fear. Man, that hit me right between the eyes. You see, if the disciples truly trusted Jesus, asleep or not, he's with them. If they truly trusted Jesus, they could have enjoyed that boat ride. People pay good money to go to a theme park, get into a raft that starts at the top, slides down in the water, goes crashing into the waves, and waves are, and you're getting wet, and you're just laughing and having a great time. They could have enjoyed this. If they had just thought of the fact, I have nothing to fear. Jesus is here with me. And I'm not being facetious when I say that. What do you do with care? What do you do with your anxieties, your worries, those troubling thoughts that you spend so much time going over and over and over upon in your mind? What's our key word again at the first part of 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 7 out loud, please? Casting. Casting. It literally means to throw. Now you know what the word casting is. It's not like you're taking a fishing rod and casting. This has to do with what you would do with a piece of trash. You would throw it into the trash can. You don't throw precious things. Even a baseball that's been signed, you don't want to throw that. But if it's just some bait, yeah, you can throw that. But I'm talking about what we are to throw. You see, we tend to treat our cares as precious. And when you look at what the Bible says there, casting, it means, you know what, that thing that I count precious, that I want to keep close to me, what I want to keep thinking about, that I want to maintain and harbor in my heart and so forth, God says, throw it. Throw it. Now that's the hard part. Throw it. He doesn't say, hand it over. He didn't say, give it to me. Throwing all your care. where? Upon me. Don't hand it to me. Don't give it to me. Throw it on me. I've been singing all morning, "Leave It There." And I thought, well, we'll sing that one this morning, but it's not in our hymn book. Take your burdens to the Lord and leave it there. If you trust and never doubt, He will surely bring you out. Take your burden to the Lord and leave it there. That's what happens when you truly throw and cast. You can't take it back because it's in the trash. You threw it away. Now, here's what kids do. You throw something in the trash. They go to the trash and start digging out what they think is precious to them. You say, no, that's trash. Leave it there. Do the same thing with your thoughts. Do the same thing with your troubles and your pains and everything. Oh, you're still going to have pain, but you know what? You're throwing it upon Him. You're still going to have financial trouble, but you're going to throw it upon Him. You're still going to have all kinds of issues in your life. All of us are going to have pain, but you know what? You throw it upon Him because He said, throw it on me. Throw it upon me. He didn't say throw it before me, beside me. Throw it on me. In fact, the word upon literally occurs twice there, almost as if to emphasize, put it on Him. Put it upon Him. Don't take it back. So when you do pray, and even if you don't pray about it, you know that He knows, and that's enough. Well, how did the children of Israel cast all their care upon Him? See, in 3:7, all we read is that God told Moses, I've seen it. I've heard it. And I know it. Now let's go to Exodus 4. God had told Moses and Aaron to go before the children of Israel. And it says in 4:29, Moses and Aaron went and gathered together all the elders of the children of Israel. And Aaron spake all the words which the Lord had spoken unto Moses and did signs in sight of the people. God gave him signs to do as well. It's verse 31 that really hit me. I hope it hits you. And the people, they believed. And when they heard that the Lord had visited the children of Israel and that He had looked upon their affliction. Notice, it's not when they knew He's taking it away. When they knew that He looked upon their affliction, look at their response. Then they bowed their heads and worshiped. Folks, I want you to see how important your response is to the fact that God knows what you're going through. How did the children of Israel cast all their care upon God? When they realized that God saw, not healed, their suffering, they responded with verse 31. They believed and worshiped. The Lord looked upon their affliction. That is important to accept when you're afflicted. God knows my affliction. And when you believe that God has looked upon your affliction, you too will worship Him. Part of your worship is the casting of your care upon Him. The casting of your worry and your thoughts upon Him. If you truly believe that God has looked upon your affliction, that He does indeed care for you, what kind of a response will that emit in you? You will worship Him. You will want to worship Him. Notice, again, they worship God in 4:31, not because there's some kind of physical relief to their pain, not because the taskmasters are no longer striking them, not because they are still not being burdened with having to do twice as much later on. No, they simply worship God because they know that God knows. They know that God knows and is concerned, the way the King James puts it, visited them. In other words, it was enough for them to know that God knew. Is it enough for you to know that God knows? Perhaps the reason people have a hard time truly worshiping God is because true worship acknowledges who God is. That he indeed does care for you. And I believe sometimes when people are going through all kinds of tremendous pain and so forth, if they try to keep it upon themselves, if they allow those thoughts to keep going, they will not worship him. If you truly believe that God knows, you would worship him. You would cast all your care upon him. If you truly believe that God cared for you, you would truly worship him with true worship. But if you're headed down the path of unbelief, unlike the children of Israel where it says they believe, the people believe, but if you're headed down the path of unbelief where you don't believe that God knows and you don't believe that God cares, you have none of God's assurance, you are going down a very dangerous path. You will not worship him. You will not sing hymns to him. You will not spend time in prayer with him. You will not meditate on his word. You will not read his word with interest. You won't listen to his word with interest. You'll sit here this morning and you won't even listen because it doesn't interest you. You won't worship him with his tithe and with your offerings. You will become bored with true worship. That is worshiping him in spirit and in truth. And because you don't worship him, you don't care about the style of worship, whether it really pleases God or not. So you attend churches whose so-called worship style is appealing to you, not to God. Our son Jesse calls it happy churches. Happy, happy, happy on Sunday. Waving hands and dancing around and singing, and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the roller coaster's down. And the emotions are gone because it's all emotion. It's all fluff. It's all feeling. And not faith. Jesus said, don't you have faith? Where's your faith? Let's close in 1 Peter 5:7. I'm done with Exodus. Exodus is what took me to the New Testament, 1 Peter 5:7. And this is where I want us to really dissect that word casting. Because that's what we really need to be doing. That's our problem. We're not casting. Would you listen closely as I make this statement? And I've got it written out so that I say it right. The action of casting in 1 Peter 5:7, that first word, precedes the action of the main verb. You will notice that the sentence begins in verse 6. What is the main verb in verses 6 and 7? You see, casting is a participle. It's not a verb. It's a verbal form of a noun, but casting. What is the main verb? And here it is. Humble. Humble. You say, this is really technical. Hey, I believe you take the word of God, you find out what the verb tense is, you find out exactly what he is saying here. And it means having cast, your cares upon him. So let me read it this way. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, having already cast your cares upon him. It requires humility. You know, it requires humility to take those thoughts that you want to keep taking in your mind and keep going over and over, and the pain that you're enduring, and just, and you're constantly, am I ever going to get better? And, oh, this is so hard. And I'm with you on that. Takes humility. Say, you know what? All on you, Lord. And when you read it that way, humble yourselves therefore under the mighty hand of God, having cast all your cares upon him. What's the second part of verse 6 say? Second part of verse 6, that he may exalt you in due time. When you humble yourselves therefore under the mighty hand of God, having cast all your cares upon him, he will exalt you in due time. Now let's apply that to the children of Israel. They bowed down and worshiped. That's humility. And they weren't done with their pain. Oh, they almost get up, they get upset in the next few chapters because things get worse. But then you jump, get up to chapter 14. And they're leaving Egypt. And here's how the Bible puts it in Exodus 14:8. They went out with a high hand. They depart Egypt exalted. Pharaoh groveling. All the people of Egypt saying, go, go, go. Not only have they let them go, they are giving them all kinds of precious things and saying, now take this and go, please go. And they left with a high hand. God had exalted them in due time. When he wanted to exalt them, he did so. And when he does it, oh my. He always does things well. A pastor may know some of what his people are going through, but not all of it. And he doesn't necessarily need to know. And in fact, it's not good for people to tell the pastor and then leave it with him. Because what can he do? Take it to the Lord and throw it on him. It's necessary that you know that God knows. It's not necessary that you know that I know or that your deacon knows. It's fine to tell him, but that's not the ultimate. That's not the end. The end is that you know that God knows. And that is enough to cause you to bow your head and worship him in humility. Knowing that God knows and that he does care for you, your response will be to cast all your care upon him. And that'll be evident by doing exactly what they did in Exodus chapter 4 and verse 31. The people believed, and when they heard that the Lord had visited the children of Israel and that he had looked upon their affliction, then they bowed their heads and worshiped. Casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. But don't forget verse 6. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, and he will exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you.